שבוע טוב. My first task, by tradition, in this case, I'd like to thank you very much, Rachel. I always enjoy your ideas very much. And I also realized tonight, not only how much I enjoy your ideas, but how much I enjoy your presentation. I'd like to also thank many of the people here who have been to many of the talks that we've had, many of the evenings we've had for ETAR, year after year. So this is an opportunity for me to also thank you for coming. And also on a personal level, I feel that I've had this opportunity to speak to you on an annual basis as I see your faces again. And perhaps I can even continue ideas that spread across the years. On the other hand, again, part of the tradition is that I get I speak fairly late, and so if I can't keep you awake for this period, if I can't keep my point short and strong, I'm going to lose you. So, knowing that, I wanted to just carry across one little thought bite, one little idea. It's an idea that's fairly easy to say, and it'll take me a few more minutes to actually explain it, and then a couple of hours to actually prove it. So that excuses me from proving it. But I will try to at least give some indication that it's true. I say that I mentioned the continuation of the ideas that I spread across the years, because a number of times over the years I've touched on the subject of evolution. I don't actually know why. It's not that I always speak about it. I actually don't know the actual connection. The idea is as follows. We often think of Kadosh Baruch Hu as a grand engineer, grand designer, who has, and this is obviously in the debate on evolution, we present the idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu, in fact, planned it all in advance, knows the details, and so we set him up as this perfect engineer. And the opposing camp, which by now really should get on with realizing that it's long lost, I should actually move on to try to understand the meaning of the situation as it stands, is that it often claims, no, God is a hacker. In the sense that sort of like, you know, just look at the situation. By all the arguments of probability we may have lost, but after all, you must admit that if the whole universe as it was created over the billions of years of evolution is really the product of the design, now why do we see so often a process of improvisation, and anyway, you know, this whole sort of like doing it slowly and over time. And I would like to propose that our view of God, the master engineer, is actually not the right way to look at it. The right way to look at it is to use the metaphor of God the gardener. And that is the way we should look at it. Now, what do I mean by saying that Kadosh Baruch Hu is a gardener? Well, a gardener, a human gardener, works within his little plot of land or his garden, constrained by laws that the gardener himself does not create, and the plants have their own forces, and the rules that those plants obey are not actually rules that the gardener chooses, but the gardener responds to what comes, what grows in the garden. He's almost opportunistic sometimes. What does well will be strengthened and maybe weeded, and the particular difference that between a gardener and an engineer is that particularly if we think of the difference between Kadosh Baruch Hu and the gardener obviously is that the rules by which Kadosh Baruch Hu worked are rules that Kadosh Baruch Hu created, but nevertheless, like the gardener, he acts in this world as if those rules are binding most of the time, and in that sense, he can be seen as acting similarly to the gardener. The difference between a master engineer and a master gardener is that a master engineer would know exactly what he wants, down to the last detail. He would plan it all. And the last thing that you'd imagine the perfect engineer ever saying is, after all, if he's a perfect engineer, he knows how it's going to come out. The very idea that somehow surprises him, that's more like the kind of activities that you might expect from a gardener. Now, again, take the idea that the gardener doesn't necessarily have to have exactly the picture in place. He may have the overall idea of what he wants. He may want the garden to be lush, to be green. He might want a lot of diversity in the garden. But it isn't necessarily the case that there is an exact picture down to the last detail. And I could sort of end here and say, well, I think that maybe if we just wanted to use the psukim as proof, that by itself, that's what the Torah is telling us by saying, "Vayah Elokim et kol she'asah v'hineh tov." That it came to forces, there are forces in the garden themselves, as if the garden has the Bechira Chofshit itself. And if it came out this way, because the prophet says, Ya Nasher Asal, this, right? Because Avram did behave like this, I responded like this, Ya Nasher, because you didn't listen to me, I moved things this way. And Kadosh Baruch Hu is, in this sense, opportunistic and responsive while still guiding it. That's basically the concept of, I see as the concept of Kadosh Baruch Hu as the cosmic gardener. And what I like about this idea is that it unifies for me Kadosh Baruch Hu's guidance in three different fields. One, the whole history of the world, evolution. Kadosh Baruch Hu acts as a gardener. I'll get into this in a little bit more detail. Secondly, it gives a basis for the way Kadosh Baruch Hu interacts with the world itself and helps me to answer questions of Tov V'Ra in the world. Kadosh Baruch Hu responding to humanity and allowing forces to develop. The Kadosh Baruch Hu himself respects and gives precedence sometimes over what we might imagine would be the immediate good. And thirdly, it exactly fits in with the way things happen in the Torah. The way Kadosh Baruch Hu is explaining to us in the Torah is the format of his Hanhaga. That's what I mean by saying Kadosh Baruch Hu is a cosmic gardener. Now, to prove it, I need a little bit of probability theory. Now, this is really ambitious. So 5 to 10 at night to try to speak a little bit about probability. But I'm going to try to use 3 examples, and hopefully they are intuitive enough to get my point across. Imagine I want to toss 3 coins, and I want to get all of them heads up. Everybody knows maths here. So the chances of getting 3 heads out of 3 coins is 1 in 8, and therefore I have to toss them about 8 times in order to get a reasonable chance of getting my all heads. If I've got 4 coins, it's 16. If I've got 5 coins, it's 32, and so on. And if I've got 1,000 coins that I want to flip and get all of them to come heads up, it's an astronomical number of times. It's actually about a 1 with 300 zeros after it. Now, just to give some sense of how big that is, all the seconds in 13 billion years history of the universe is only about 1 with 19 zeros after it. Scientists sort of estimate the number of suns in the universe in total is about 1 trillion. So if there's 1 trillion planets, let's say, and we try this experiment every second throughout the universe and all these planets on every square meter, we're still nowhere close to the possibility none of them will come out with all 300 heads up. All thousands heads up. So just, it's important. That, in fact, we'll still need about a number of universes, something like 250 or 260 zeros after. That's the number of universes we need to do this experiment. But all is not lost. I can actually make this experiment work with just 10 tries. How do I do that? It's very simple. I take my 1,000 coins, I'm going to flip them all, and any one of them that stays heads up, I'm going to hold it down. So now only the remain. So first time I do it, 500 up, 500 down. I hold those 500 up, I flip the remaining 500, and I've got another 250 up. So I'm up to 750 now. Do that again, 875, 936, by about 10 goes, not 10 or 300 goes up, by about 10 goes, I've managed it. What that suggests now, one possibility is that if you follow where I'm taking this, is that this is actually the way Kadosh Baruch Hu works in evolution. And this is how, despite the fact, instead of Kadosh Baruch Hu sort of like deciding all 1,000 coins just be all heads up, we'll just put them that way. There is a random process, but it can't account for it otherwise, and so therefore we come to the conclusion that I see the process in history of the way Kadosh Baruch Hu holding down those things that do come up. Now you might say, well, so what? Because after all, you know, what's so good about this of having 1,000 coins straight up? After all, well, the example I gave you is a little bit of a battle. You might say 1,000 coins, you know, so what? In the end, we all have the coins heads up. So, you know, why go through this process? You're cheating after all. Just put them the right way in the first place. And the answer is, if I've given you a different example of about, say, 320,000 coins, and I'd arrange them in 480 rows and 640 across, we'd have a screen, and I gave them three colors, red, yellow, and blue, we'd have a screen, a regular, what we call a VGA screen, and if I gave all those colors random variations, they would all, guaranteed you see nothing but gray. Gray and white. But, again, if I intervened and made all sorts of nice rules like neighboring coins or pixels in this case should form with the same color should keep their color, then you'll start getting very interesting patterns on your screen. So there we see the same idea of intervention in a random process, but at the same time the interesting but not necessarily pre-designed patterns come up. What I'm suggesting is that basically, let me now go on to the third example. But I seem to have held on to your attention for the first two. If we just take the human mind that is developed, according to scientists, the human line developed about 5 million years ago, split off from those of the chimpanzee. That's 5 million years is a ridiculously small number of years. It's about 200,000 generations, an absurdly small number, but even a billion would be a very absurdly small number. But on the other hand, 200,000 we don't have any respect for these days. So here we have presumably an evolutionary process that's gone from that where very, very complex processes have developed between us and the chimpanzee, innate processes that exist in every single human mind, so we know it's not through the process of learning. These things that exist, these processes did not exist 200,000 generations ago, and now they exist. Why is this like, this is equivalent. If these processes were to happen in a random manner, this would be equivalent to many millions of coins, all floating heads up. Absolutely impossible. And even if I broke down the process and said, well, okay, yes, but it happened in all sorts of stages. A little stage happens, and that gives us some survival advantage, and then another stage happens, then I could say that, well, still the tiniest possible stage I can imagine would still be well less than 1,000, equivalent of 1,000 coins all floating heads up. There was no survival advantage between one generation and another generation that formed some sort of cognitive advantage. Randomly impossible. But it's not randomly impossible if Kadosh Baruch Hu's hashgacha in the world works as follows. If some first part of the pro, some neuron falls into place exactly right, that swarm says, okay, we'll hold on to that individual. That individual will spread. And without any survival advantage in a natural way, Kadosh Baruch Hu places this person with that person, gives advantage to that person. And then what Kadosh Baruch Hu is basically doing is playing the game the way I did, the way I cheated on the 1,000 coin game. Right? The interesting thing is I'm suggesting that nature actually has a kind of free will of its own. Kadosh Baruch Hu Hashgacha. Kadosh Baruch Hu Hashgacha in the world before human beings arrived is as if nature itself has free will. And that free will might generate many different possibilities, and Kadosh Baruch Hu responded to them. And while, without saying that I know why Kadosh Baruch Hu would do things this way, I would say this seems to be empirically what we learn, that Kadosh Baruch Hu did do this. And similarly, once you get to the human stage, it's the same thing. The free will here, once human beings appear on the scene, and as we see in the Torah, this is exactly what happens. Human beings choose to obey Kadosh Baruch Hu, choose to not obey Kadosh Baruch Hu. Avraham Avinu chooses to ask Kadosh Baruch Hu for the world to go this way. Moshe Rabbeinu argues Kadosh Baruch Hu and that it should go that way. And in every case, Kadosh Baruch Hu seems to be responding. Okay, we can work with that. If you know this sounds, yes, I will try. We will try and do this. If it doesn't succeed, then we go to another stage. And those who have had the opportunity to maybe go through some of these ideas in detail on the Perushim, this is the way I try to give the Perush and many of the stories of the Torah itself, and therefore I find this unity in Kadosh Baruch Hu Hashgacha. It provides me one framework for putting it all together. This idea actually gives me two insights for the way I relate to Etan. Both Etan's life and the fact that Etan was taken from us. On the one hand, there isn't an issue. I'll deal with the second one first. There isn't an issue that, you know, everything that Etan being taken away from us, not for me, is not part of some plan. It's not that, you know, he was a great person who could have done so much for the world, and did do so much even in her short life. How much more could she have done in a longer life? It's not my part of the plan. Kadosh Baruch Hu is a gardener. There are laws that Kadosh Baruch Hu also loves and respects. And those laws relate to the way biology works, the way chemicals work, the way molecules work, the way genetics work. And those laws also allow to take their course. It's not that Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's not that it's simply, you know, all engineered and put in place. But the other side is that this is exactly what Kadosh Baruch Hu, Etta's life, who Etta was, is exactly what Kadosh Baruch Hu expects from us, from mankind, from humanity. A person who's got a very clear desire that the world should be a certain way. That a person not only whose speech in prayer speaks to Kadosh Baruch Hu and asks for the world to be this way, but in action too, embodies a life that says, I want it to be like this, I want it to happen now, and that's exactly how Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's exactly what Kadosh Baruch Hu expects from the world as a gardener, but, and will yet take that as input and create his world from that. That's the insight that this idea gives me on Etan that I wanted to share with you this evening.
So people will do